Yeah, verse 11.
Before we do, Roe had a question about the first half of this chapter, and maybe the rest of you do as well, so let me make a clarity on things. At verse 6 of the first half of this chapter, Paul says that those who seem to be somewhat, whatsoever they were, makes no matter to me, God accept no man purpose or person. For they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. And I suggested last week that it very well may be that these were highfalutin Gentiles as well as highfalutin Jews. And I think that's actually true. There were both Jew and Gentile that felt that because of their status in various cities of Galatia, Ephesus, you remember, you had the coppersmiths that were making the shrines to the goddess Diana. Laodicea, which was a church in Galatia, had individuals that believed that their eye salve was godly scent, and they felt rather important over that. At Colossae, they had a number of individuals that felt that they were more superior in their knowledge than other individuals, and that's why in the third chapter of the book of Galatians, it talks a great deal about those that were giving themselves to idolatry, to the worship of angels, to things unseen, and etc. So that the churches of Galatia had individuals that through their own preference had elevated themselves to positions of authority. But if you read on to verse 9, Paul names three that are apostles that felt that their understanding was greater than Paul's. And notice how he says it. When James, Cephas, that's Peter, and John, who seemed to be what? Pillars. What's that remind you of from verse 6? Self-esteem? They seem to be pillars. They seem to be the go-to men. Well, it could be, but understand that those three men were of what nationality? Jews. And Peter was among them. When Peter had gone to the house of Cornelius, what's the first thing he told Cornelius? Before that. You know that it is a what? Unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to be in the house of a Gentile. But God has showed me that I should call no man what? Common or unclean. Peter wrestled with that, even though God had told him, you go doubting nothing. Now, we know from the language of Acts chapter 10, Peter went with some questions in his mind. He went doubting. He knew that it was unlawful for a Jew to be around a Gentile, but under whose law? Man's law. God never authorized that. That came from Jews. So that when he finally saw that the grace of God had been given to the Gentiles, they were speaking in tongues, but that's the only gift they received, Peter commanded that they should be what?
Baptized.
Now, we're going to read a little later here where Peter doesn't get clear away from that Jewish tradition. It's still ingrained in him. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But now you've got Peter, James, and John, who seem to be pillars. Watch what happened. When they understood, the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship. They understood us now. They agreed with us that we should go to who? Gentiles. Now, in the King James, it says what? Heathen. You see, there's still that cultural understanding. There's still that cultural verbiage. And they should go to the circumcision, the Jews. There's still that cultural division here. Understand that if the book, or the letter rather, of Galatians was written between 55 and 60 A.D., and that's the estimation of scholars, I don't have a clue. I didn't work in the post office then. I don't know. But I can't find a postmark on this letter. But if the scholars are right, between 55 and 60 A.D., the church is still relatively young, 30-some years, okay? How long does it take? Now, think this through with your own culture here in the United States. How long does it take to change well-established culture? Oh, my. Now, you're hearing about it on the news again, and it creeps up about every 5 to 10 years. You're hearing a word that you didn't hear 30 years ago, but they changed the words, and it's still the same intent. But the word is reparations. Why are they bringing that up? Reparations. What did all that, where's that stem from? Slavery. When was slavery in this country? Well, it actually came with the founders. And then they fought a war. Listen, I'm a history buff on Civil War. Don't ever teach that the Civil War was all about slavery. It wasn't at all. It was about states' rights. And the South proved their point. Now, I can't say that many places in the North without getting shot at. But that's the truth. They wanted to know if each individual state had the right to own slaves. They proved states' rights. What they also proved was that black folks are human too. Most history books are written by the victors, okay? If you read the downside books of that, you'll find a lot better history. Most slaves were not treated like you see the pictures in the more elaborate history books. Most slaves were treated with some civility. They didn't live in a big house. They didn't want to. They wanted to be among their own people. And yet they were treated with civility. They were permitted ground to raise their own gardens. The clothing that they had wasn't like in the big house, and that's what they called the master's house, you know, the big house. Wasn't that at all. They were granted certain permissions to get cloth. Well, with not having a great deal of money, what kind of cloth are they going to get? Gunny sacks and what have you. But they still had good clothes, too. They had meat. Most slaves were treated with civility, so that when the Union armies came down through the South and they found these plantations with these slaves on it, the owners of the plantation were upset because the Northern army was tearing up their fields, getting rid of their cotton. You take away their cash crop, the South goes into poverty. They haven't got anything to sell. The Emancipation Proclamation really didn't free any slaves. It really didn't. David agrees with me. He's a historian. It did. Think about it. Lincoln wasn't president of the South. Who was? Jefferson Davis. No relation. I've checked it out. So he had no authority in the South. There were three states and several provinces in Louisiana that he exempted from that proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation, because of the problems that it would cause. Three of those states were border states. He didn't want them siding with the South. But some did, some didn't. But they were border states, so let's don't include them in that Emancipation Proclamation. And the slaves in the North, and there were slaves in the North, were already considered free. That Emancipation Proclamation was just a piece of paper. But what it did was scare France, who was buying the South's cotton. And when the South can't sell their cotton, number one, because there's not much more, the North tore it up. Number two, France is scared that the president's going to, that President Lincoln's going to do something to end relationship with France. Well, when you haven't got any product to sell and no money coming in, what's the South got to do? We give up. And that's precisely what won that war. Yeah, it is. I've preached it three or four times. Not here yet, but I've preached it. China's going to come over probably in the next few months and say, give us the keys, we already own you.
You mentioned about the people who realized they were human. Where do you think that came from?
Well, that's the other side of this, Don. Isn't it interesting that many of the Negro spirituals are songs that we sing in church now? That's true. That's true. They only owned one book among maybe four or five families. What book do you think they owned? The Bible. Only a few slaves could read. And one of the reasons that they kept slaves from being able to read and write is so that they couldn't sign themselves away to some other plantation. They had to stay put. But if you had one person that could read and not let master know, you know, you come around, and a lot of times they do it by memory. They were good students. They kept it up here. Well, again, good lessons. Well, anyway.
Today we got the greed of their ancestors wanted to go back and take advantage of this. It's the greed of people.
That's it. And I'll tell you.
It's got nothing to do with the way they were treated.
Oh, my, no. And it will bankrupt any state that says let's do reparations because they believe that the ancestors are entitled to millions each. So, you know. Yeah, and that's the reason we've got an open border. They want to buy their votes. That's all that is. That's all it is. Well, not going to talk politics about it. What I'm illustrating is that culture takes years and years and years to change. Peter, James, and John, and Paul had to struggle with their upbringing. They had to struggle with it. Well, yeah, I was going to say in my own family, I've never personally had any problem with blacks. I never have. But my grandmother did. She had a great deal of trouble with it because of her upbringing. But when she went to Cleveland with my grandfather, they got married and went to Cleveland. He did his internship up there, and she went into school teaching. In Cleveland, you're going to have blacks. She did not mistreat them one bit. But she didn't trust them because of her upbringing. See? My grandfather had the same upbringing. But he was one of the few doctors in Morgan County, Ohio, that would doctor a black man. And I knew the fella that came to my grandfather. I didn't know my grandfather, so I know the stories, and then I was able to associate names with certain people. And I knew this particular man. He went to my grandfather one day, and he says, "Doc, Why are you doctoring black people?" He says, they're just different. And he says, they have an odor. And grandfather looked at him and says, "Well, a white man will stink too if he doesn't take a bath." That was his answer.
Well, supposedly, over in Africa, the black people could tell what a white person is around by the smell.
Sure. It's a cultural thing. It's a cultural thing. Grandfather went on to tell him, he said, if you cut one open, you're not going to know whether they're black, white, or purple. That was his answer, black, white, or purple. He said, if they're purple, you got a big problem. Well, anyway, this was the cultural thing here. But notice that Paul says at verse 10, we settled the problem. They're going to go to Jews. We're going to go to Gentiles. And what we need to understand is that we should remember the poor, the same which I was also forward to do. I didn't have any problem with this, Paul says. But now look at verse 11. Yeah, okay. Correct. I don't know if it's late enough to do that. I've wondered that myself. It may be that he and Barnabas, who Paul and Silas were later told to take that to Jerusalem, and Silas comes along in a little while. It's Barnabas is mentioned here. So my personal thought, Ro, is it's not late enough for Paul to be collecting those funds that went to Jerusalem. It may well have been, but if you go back.
I wonder if they're saying, don't forget us poor Jews back here in Jerusalem while you're among the Gentiles.
Well, if you go back to when the discussion of circumcision took place, when Paul and Barnabas were there with the apostles and they were discussing, I can't remember what, about Acts chapter 12, someplace in there. You go back to that chapter and you'll remember that there also they discussed to remember the poor. So this charge here would carry on from that initial meeting. And Paul was always concerned about the poor folk. So whether this was in part of that collection or not, I personally think this is too early for that. But the letter that had been sent out to other Gentiles, abstained from fornication, idols, and that kind of thing, also referred to remembering the poor. Go ahead, David. Either way. Well, either way, poor folk would exist both Jew and Gentile. And if Paul's going to go to the Gentile, remember there are poor Jews. You can turn that around. If Peter and the rest of them are going to go to the Jews, remember there's also poor Gentiles. So the idea here is take care of your brethren. Take care of your brethren. They're going to have needs here. Other questions or comments before we look at what this battle between Paul and Peter was? Now remember, the culture didn't change overnight. So that at verse 11, that's why I just copied it and put it on the chart. When Peter came to Antioch, now this is Antioch of Pisidia, okay? There's two Antiochs. There's an Antioch of Syria, and that's the place where disciples were called Christians first. There's an Antioch of Pisidia, and the Antioch of Pisidia is part of the Galatian nation, okay? When Peter came to Antioch of Pisidia, Paul said, I withstood him to the face. Why? He was to be blamed. Well, what did he do? Well, let's keep reading. Before that, certain came from James. He did eat, and James would have come with these Gentiles, okay? We usually charge Paul with this. Paul's the one that saw the problem. But these Gentiles came with James. Before that certain came from James, he, Peter, did eat with the Gentiles. But when, I had that wrong, when the Jews came with James, okay? So that back up here at verse 9, you still got James, Peter, and John, who seem to be pillars. Now James is coming into Antioch of Pisidia, and he's bringing Jews with him.
These came from James. In other words, these came from Jerusalem.
Well, now that you've asked that row, I don't know. I've always looked at the fact that with Peter, James, and John, being the fishermen brothers that they were, that James, by this time, could well have left Jerusalem, brought these men with him. He may have sent them. I don't know. He could have sent them. But either way, you've got Jews now entering the presence of the Apostle Peter. Before that certain came from James, he, Peter, did eat with the Gentiles. But when they, the Jews, were come, Peter withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were what? Now, why would he be afraid of them? Because of the culture. But now look what I got on the chart up here. Peter had already eaten with Gentiles. It says so here, verse 12. He'd been eating with Gentiles. Did they eat any different than Jews?
Yes. Well, they might have eaten some different things. Jews might have still
they use their mouth or their feet. They feed themselves with their hands or what?
But
I'm not talking about the food. The food is another cultural thing here. But Peter is fellowshipping. Take the word eat out. He's having fellowship. He's enjoying being with Gentiles until Jews come in. But now what had Peter also done with Gentiles? Yeah. And to those Gentiles he said, God has showed me that I should not be a... And here he is. See? Here he is. He's being hypocritical. So, Paul says, other Jews, more than Peter. And we have to make the assumption that these other Jews are also now what?
Christians.
They should have known better. Other Jews dissembled them likewise with him, insomuch that who else is drawn away with it? Barnabas. Now, who's Barnabas with? Paul. So, this is a great big dissension now. You got all the Jews huddling up. What's that going to make the Gentiles feel like? Second-class citizens. Okay? Barnabas is taken away in their dissimulation. Now, before we go any farther, let's pull this up to today, okay? Let's say we've got a gospel meeting going on here, and we've got maybe 35, 40 people from other places come in and they assemble with us and all like that. What usually happens after services, or sometimes even before?
We talk to the people
we know. We talk to the people we know. What's that make the folks that you don't know feel like? Huh. Not very friendly. Now let's do something else. Let's just have a regular Sunday service. You talk to everybody? Or just certain ones? Well, yeah, Pat, that, you know, that's why I always lean against that shelf, because of the got to get to lunch first group, you know, they'll knock you down after amen. But the ones that do stay in here visiting, visit with who?
Friends and family.
Friends and family, and usually family. And if you have visitors, what happens? Out the door they go. They get lost in the shuffle. Now, if we are not to be a respecter of persons, are we to be or not? No, we're not to be. Try to think in your mind of someone you haven't spoken to. Go talk to them tomorrow night. Go talk to them Sunday. Pick someone you haven't talked to. You know who they are, but you really don't know them. You know, now preachers have it easy. There's an unwritten union rule that says that us preachers have to stand back in here choking ourselves with that tie and shake every hand. And if you miss one, that's a black mark. And after 10 black marks, they have a business meeting to decide what's wrong with the preacher. You know, that's union rules. And if you have elders, it's a little shorter than that. You understand my point. If we're not a respecter of persons, then let's don't act like we are. Because of the next verse. Notice. Paul said to Peter, or Paul says about this, when I saw they walk not uprightly. Who's they? All these Jews with Peter and Barnabas. All of them. Now, who was the ringleader of this? Peter. Peter should have known better. Now, we give him a free pass. He's an impulsive man, you know. Why, he's the one that said that he'd never deny Christ, but he did. I'll defend you. And he pulls out a sword rather than opening up his mouth. Remember that? When he's told that the Lord is risen, he doesn't believe it. He has to run over to the tomb, and he's running on inside. John got there first, but Peter just runs right past him right on inside. He's a very impulsive man. But obviously because of this cultural upbringing, who's he trying to make happy? Jews. When I saw they walked not uprightly, Paul said, you're a hypocrite. Now, you won't find that in any translation, so I'll read it to you from what King James said. When I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, you might want to underscore that or highlight that, I said to Peter before them all, if thou being a Jew lives after the manner of Gentiles, and he had been doing that, and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? Now, if you can be among Gentiles and not compel them, or and not compel if you can be with Gentiles one time and then all of a sudden have to be with the Jews, how can you preach to either one of them? What is Paul telling Peter? You're hypocritical here. You're playing both sides against the middle. Will that work? No. Is there now under Christ a division between Jew and Gentile? No. Did Peter understand that, or had he ever heard that? Yes. And after he had baptized the house of Cornelius, he ends up coming back to Jerusalem to report that. And in the conference wherein Peter, James, John, the other apostles, Paul and Barnabas are in that meeting, they discuss the need for Gentiles to be circumcised, and they come to the conclusion that God would not put a burden on Gentiles that not even our forefathers were able to bear. Remember that? So they had already decided that circumcision is nothing. Hadn't got anything to do with salvation. It is only a cultural thing. Can Gentiles, if they want to, be circumcised? Yes. Most doctors require it, or at least highly recommend it. It's a health feature. And when you do it when they're 8 days old or less, some of them within 24 hours of being born. No pain. It's over. It's done. But it's a medical procedure. It's not a cultural procedure to prove that you're a child of God. When people understand that the Lord is not about the physical, but about the spiritual, we'll get along a whole lot better. Now, let me tell you a true story to help this, because Paul's sermon is not over. I know there's a paragraph marked there at verse 15, but he's not done talking to these people till you get to the end of the chapter. Okay? So we'll look at that. And yes, I am mindful some of you need to go in about 5-10 minutes here. Here's my point. We've had Don Wright here for a gospel meeting. Hopefully most of you remember Don. He's still one of the best friends I've got in this world. I talked to him on the way home, found out that when I was in Ohio, Don had been there just the week before in a meeting just 25 miles from where I was preaching that funeral. But that was the week before. So we talked to each other. Don and I do that quite often, just call and find out how everybody's doing. When Don went to Bloomington, Don didn't have any problems going to Bloomington at all. But Bloomington had some problems with Don coming after they found out he's a black man. Now, the congregation there didn't have much of a problem except for four families. And four families, and I've talked to all four of them, all four families now are dead and gone. But when I was up there at Bloomington for 18 years, I talked to them about that and tried to get them to come back. I said, Don's not here anymore. Oh, but you might have him for a meeting. We did. Twice. Their statement, quote, I'm not going to be worshiping with any black man. Period. That's harsh. Don called me. He'd stayed there at Bloomington about 5 years. He called me and he says, I've got to talk to you. So there was a meeting going on over in Illinois, and that gave us a good long time to get over there and a good long time to come back and have a good time while we're there. And he talked to me extensively about it. And I said, Don, I know that you don't hold it against them. I know that what they said hurt. But I want to know how you really think about it. And how does Jan and the kids take it? The kids were just little kids at the time. Whitney, the youngest, I think, was 4 years old when they moved, four or five. She'd just been born when they came, so she couldn't have been more than 6 years old when they moved. Anyway, Don says, Mike, he said, I've had a lot of statements hurt. But when brethren tell me that, that pretty well killed me. And he said, that's why I want to leave. Jan got to the point that she couldn't talk to but very few there. Services would be over, she'd go out the back door. There were a few at Bloomington that did everything they could to comfort and protect them, provide for them. But those four families leaving and making that statement, that continued to hurt for 5 years. Now, I don't know when Peter talked to the house of Cornelius. Therefore, I don't know how many years transpired between Cornelius and Paul confronting Peter about his hypocrisy. But it wouldn't matter because Peter knew better. In the church, I don't know the culture of everybody. I know how I was brought up. I've been in Indiana now 33 years. I believe I am a Hoosier. I've dribbled a basketball. I've been to the Indy 500, and I've hunted mushrooms. I am a Hoosier. Okay? You're supposed to do all three of those things in Indianapolis, but they wouldn't let me have a basketball when I went to the Indy 500. And there's no mushrooms on the infield. I know the culture. I've learned to accept other changes in the culture. I've learned to love persimmon pudding. You can't find that very many places in Ohio. You ask about persimmon pudding, they don't even know what a persimmon is. I've learned differences. But shouldn't it be that we understand as the family of God, there's no cultural differences between brethren? If we expect to go to heaven, and most of us, all of us do, Is there going to be a section for Hoosiers and a section for Buckeyes and a section for Georgia Peaches? No. No. Or red, yellow, brown, or purple. Years ago, and I'll close with this because I know somebody got to get going here. Years ago, there was a man and his wife that I knew them both, loved them dearly. In fact, I preached her funeral. I did. I preached this woman's funeral. And I was kind of surprised they called me to do it, but they did. I had to go back to, I was out here when she died, and they called and they said, you need to come back and preach Helen's funeral. So I did. But Helen and her husband were very institutional minded. Her dad was one of my mentors, and Fred was anything but institutional. He was totally against it. But Helen had devised a few things that became socially acceptable, and it was institutional because it ended up getting members of the church involved in that and financially and all that kind of thing. So one day her husband and I were talking about it and getting kind of heated in that argument about it. And Helen came in and she says, Mike, I hope that all three of us get to go to heaven. But when we get there, I'll stay in the northeast, you stay in the southwest. Now that she actually said that. And I looked at her husband and I said, evidently she's going to take some barbed wire with her too. And I meant it. That's not heaven. And it best not be the church on earth. We're brethren. Now, yeah, we're allowed to have friends. It's like I talked about Sunday night. A man that hath friends must show himself to be friendly. And there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. And we went through, what, four or five different points about friendship Sunday night. If we can't be that in the flesh in the Lord's church, then don't expect to find heaven for your soul. We've got to be friends with Christ, who is friends and is friends with everyone that obeys him. And here's the scripture. Ye are my friends if what? You do whatsoever I command you. That settles it, doesn't it? He doesn't permit hypocrisy. Now, in the remaining few verses of this chapter that we'll cover next week, Paul hammers on that point. That's why I'm going to wait for it. He hammers on this. You can't be hypocritical and be a Christian. It just isn't there. I would ask you to do this homework, then I'm done. Read the rest of the chapter, study it very carefully, but be able to explain in detail verse 20. Galatians 2:20. Be able to explain that in detail, because next week I'm going to ask you how much of a life you're allowed to decide for yourself as a Christian. How much of a life are you allowed to live and decide in detail? As a Christian, you look at Galatians 2:20 and dig very deep. Dig very deep. Who has to control your life? See, that's where we're going. That's where we're going. Okay, I know several of you got to go. So before we do, very quickly, Jim Cassidy dismisses. Jim and David, be sure to extend my condolences. Many of John's family have been my friends.